Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and we have Dan Zangroni back today. This time he's in New York, New York State, and he's with his mom, Lucretia. So thanks a lot for being here.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
Thank you for inviting us.
No, it's my pleasure. And, you know, my wife said I had to talk more about the family this time. Last time we talked about houses, which she loved. And after she watched it, she said it made me want to move there. And I said, well, you know, let's move.
Oh, she's interested in moving. Okay. Well, at least, you know, so part of the year you can come and visit. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny because we, you had mentioned Tropea on the broadcast. So I showed her some pictures from there, and that's another amazing place. Yeah. And then we watched just this past Sunday, Stanley Tucci was in Calabria.
You watched it.
Some people, you know, I mean, how much could he say in an hour, right? But he went to his hometown, and he said, like, I think he said like 80% of the town were Tucci's. The whole town, it was Tucci.
Is that right?
It's Tucciville. It's Tucciville.
Tucciville.
Okay.
And then he was in Sheila, of course, and he was in Tropea.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a good show, but like I said, some people didn't care for it. So let's talk about Dan. I talked to you already. I want to talk to Mom.
She always steals the show. Yeah.
I hope I have the right answers.
There's no right answers. So when did your parents come to America?
My parents were born here.
Oh, they were? Okay.
My parents are, yes. They're first generation Americans. And grandma, that was the one that started the whole thing. She was born in Italy and then came here.
Oh, okay. So what year did she come?
She came, she was only a young girl.
I think it was 1900, 1901, maybe.
Yes. Oh, so pretty early then, yeah.
She had one child there before she came. And then when she came here, she had the rest of the family.
Right, and that's not too dissimilar from my family, although both my parents had, brothers or sisters born in Italy. But all my grandparents came in 1915. So how did they wind up in you're in Utica, right? So how did they wind up there?
That I don't know.
Well, my best guess is because I've got, you know, it gets complicated very quickly because once you go back, you've got both sides on both sides. You got two sides to my mom, two sides to my dad. My dad's grandfather came real young because he wasn't on the ship manifest or anything.
The Zangrons.
Zangrons. He probably worked his way over. Tickets were, the ticket that I have for her side, they were paying like, I think it was 185 lira, which was probably, it was probably a pretty
good
amount for someone who didn't have any money. But so a lot of times, I think in the harbor in New York, when the ship came in, there were, if you might call, headhunters, recruiters, and they wanted them for the farms upstate or the railroads. So that's where my great-grandfather ended up in Utica area. So I suspect there was also the same idea, go upstate. Some of them may not have really liked because they really were from an agricultural area, Calabria.
Right.
So they didn't like the idea probably of the big city. And there was people, offering work upstate, a lot of dairy farms in upstate New York. So there was definitely a lot of farming. That's my best guess,
Why they ended up here.
In Utica. Mm-hmm. Because, it's freezing cold up here, too. But
colder than in Calabria, that's for sure.
Yeah, but once they got here, they probably, they had a job and they realized, and they probably one year after another, there was more and more opportunity. They started meeting other people from Cropani, literally, from the same town they came from. They met other people that were from Calabria as well, nearby towns. And, of course, then there was,
cotton mills.
Yeah.
Cotton mills.
And then they'll probably meeting a partner. And before you know it, they're their family was growing.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny because people did what they did when they got here. I don't know why. My mother's family, they were from Bari in Italy, and they were in New York. They were all icemen for some reason, you know, delivering ice.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Do you? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, my uncles would do it. My uncles delivered ice.
Yeah, that's right. They had a little sign in the window, both sides. One side said 25 and 50. The other side 75 and 100.
Yeah.
And whichever number of pounds of ice they wanted, that's the side they turned up. And they would come, the iceman, with those big ice tongs. Remember them?
I don't remember them, but I've seen pictures.
No, you don't.
We've seen them in the museum, I guess.
And then I can remember as a child jumping on the truck with the ice in it and getting their pick and knocking a little piece of ice off so we could suck on it.
Oh, jeez.
That's the truth.
Well, my uncle Dominic, my mother's uncle, actually, so my great uncle, he had a finger that his finger went this way, sideways, because he hit it with the ice pick one time and killed the nerve, and it permanently stuck out at an angle.
Nobody ever fixed it.
No, well, you know, back then.
Yeah, good for drinking tea.
but my uncles, a couple of my uncles, you know, delivered ice. That my uncles would have been, well, most of them would have probably been over 100 now. My mom would have been 96 or 7. But they used to, in New York, 5 flights up, walk up with 150 pounds of ice on their back.
Oh, yeah. We lived on the 3rd floor of a 6-family building.
Oh, really? Yeah. So
ice man was busy.
So how often did they bring ice? Was it every day, every other day?
No, every other day, maybe 3-4 days. And I remember getting a lot of slaps in the back of my head because I forgot to take the basin out from under the refrigerator where the ice was melting.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
Take the basin out and dump it every now and then.
Oh, it dripped. Yeah.
It dripped.
Yeah, it dripped.
It melted, yes. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, that's something. So when did you get a refrigerator?
Oh, boy, that's a good one.
Your mom had one, right?
My mom, yeah. When my mom got married, they had a refrigerator.
Well, that was 1926.
But I spent so much time at my grandmother's.
At your grandmother's, yeah.
That's where I got all the goodies. Now, most of the family, they laugh when I tell them about the trolley car that used to go by. And every now and then, the men used to come with the hot tar to fix the track so the trolley could run smoothly as it went by Bleecker Street. And as that tar was melting and hot, we would go and snitch a piece of that and chew it.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That was our gum. We couldn't buy gum.
Oh, really?
We chewed the tar.
Did you blow bubbles?
And some of them don't believe it, but that's the truth.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
All right. Maybe. All right. Wow.
Dad, you're getting an education along with the rest of us.
I had no idea. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I remember my mother's family, they were very poor. And, you know, I remember my aunt telling me that they would get, for Christmas, they would get like an orange.
That's right.
That was a big deal.
Oh,
I occasionally got a piece of coal.
Oh, really?
That was not good. You meant you were naughty.
Oh, I thought that was a myth.
Oh, no, it wasn't a myth. I'd find a piece way down in there, but there was always an orange and maybe a penny or two.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they more gifts like we see now under the tree.
No,
computers and they're Visa cards and everything else under there now.
And I bet you were happy to get that orange and the penny.
Oh, my God, we were thrilled.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. It was special. It was all ours. Most times when we got something, we had to share it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and now, so did you have was it a large family? Did you come from a large family?
No, I had just one brother.
Oh, one, so that's wonderful brother. Relatively small, yeah, for Italian yes. family back then.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I actually didn't have any first cousins, which was odd.
Wow. Yes.
My dad had no brothers and sisters, and my mom had the one brother, and he didn't have any kids.
Never married.
So we extended out, and, you know, everybody else was our cousin. You know?
That's the Bonacci side. That's the Bonaccis.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. Yeah, see, I come from a huge family. My mother had nine in her family. So I had cousins, you know, all over the place. And
yeah.
my mother, they were so poor that they would play a game that if you left your fork a certain way, your brother or sister could steal the meat off your dish when they had meat, because they didn't.
I'm sure.
A lot.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Funny. So wow. Many wonderful things. Yes.
So what did your dad do for a living?
My dad?
Yeah.
My dad worked in he used to make fishing rod reel of the Horrocks Ibbotson. Do you know that name?
Remember Horrocks Ibbotson?
I know, but I'm not a fisherman, so that wouldn't be.
They were mostly fishing equipment.
They were wealthy people here, and they owned that factory.
Yeah, kind of sporting goods. But Utica, of course, had a lot of factories. In fact, I noticed behind you, you know, the hand embroidery stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they had the mills here before they went south and all, you know.
My mother worked in the cotton mills.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And my father did that. He made flies for fishing. He would wind the flies, or he would wind the fly rods that they produced.
And that was a real skill to be able to do that, right?
Yes, it was.
Oh, he was a big fisherman.
He was quite the fisherman, and very skilled at
and
it.
Back,
yes,
back then, I mean, the creeks must have been beautiful with the trout, because I remember even as a kid, we would get some trout, and you know, there was other fish, of course. There's bass, and there's pike, and there's a lot of fish. But
a lot of fishing around here.
It changed pretty quickly, but I could imagine what it was like in the 20s and 30s. It must have really been full, all the creeks and the rivers.
Yeah, it was.
So, and of course, all the mills and all of that stuff is gone.
Yeah.
So, what did your mom do there in the mill? What did they do?
Actually, my mother ended up becoming a supervisor.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And everybody was on a machine. In fact, I was just telling Dan this morning. They were all sewing, and they would all get bundles of parts of a T-shirt or a sweatshirt. And one used to sew the band around the neck, the collarette girls. One used to sew the sleeves on, and somebody would put the two sides of the shirt together. They all did their little thing until the shirt was complete.
They used to do that in New York City. I remember in New York City in the 60s and 70s.
Sure.
They were still making, you know.
Still garments. Doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. You used to go out, you used to see all the racks lined up with the clothes and everything like that.
Yeah.
All gone. In fact, you know, my wife, her dad was a tailor. He's, her father was from Puerto Rico, but he was a tailor. And her mom was a seamstress also.
Yeah, that was a big thing around here, tailoring.
Yeah, tailors are wonderful because, you know, there's such an art because, you know, you were making clothes to fit the person, you know, it was really beautiful.
Yeah, there's still one right up the street from me that I'll take some slacks to every now and then. It's professional shortening, you know, and he takes out these suits that he used to make. All handmade.
I know.
Unbelievable.
my cousin in the 70s, early 70s, my cousin Ronnie and his partner, Richie, they had a custom clothing store in Gramercy Park in New York City. And it was all, you went in, you got measured. Everything was made in the basement right there. They had a couple of tailors.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like you said, you know, you got to pick the material and the suit. You can't. You can't imagine the
suits. No, unbelievable.
Not the same as they used to be, but they and they had some pretty famous clients too. They had Mick Jagger and his wife come in.
Oh really? And,
they used to have because they were in Gramercy Park, and it was the '70s, and they wound up making clothes for Eric Clapton and some pretty cool things, but.
Oh. But the suits, I probably felt pretty good, and they looked pretty good. I'm sure.
Oh, they were awesome. They were really, really awesome. So I have to ask you, what was it like being an Italian American? If you experienced any of it, you know, I've asked a couple of my cousins when you know the war broke out or when the war ended. Do you remember?
Remember the war very well.
Do you?
I was about 10. And the war broke. And I remember all the things we had to do. We would smash the metal cans if we had vegetables. Both ends were taken out and flattened. We would actually save the silver if we were lucky enough to have a stick of gum. The silver that lined it. Do you remember how the
gum did
all that and roll it into a ball?
It was like aluminum foil.
Yes, it was aluminum foil. Exactly. Wow. I remember the rationing. I remember the relief. We just had to go to the firehouse with a little slip of paper. Maybe we were lucky that week. We got butter, cheese, sometimes. And to the day he died, my brother would never wear corduroy because in those days, you got corduroy knickers, whether you liked them or not. You wore them. That's the truth.
And he didn't like them.
He hated them. He hated them.
That's so funny. That's so funny.
Yes.
Now, do you know if you're? I know because my grandparents had to register as enemy aliens. Did your grandparents have to register? Do you know?
No, I don't remember any of that.
Well,
yeah, you were young.
Yeah, it was a strong population in Utica, very strong. Italian.
Along one end of Utica.
And we had a fellow who actually married into the family, and he befriended Franklin D. And so we were in pretty good shape up here.
He might know him.
he won, Franklin Roosevelt won that year his presidency. So This guy who, you know, who married into the family, he married my grandfather's sister. And, you know, there was a good connection between Washington and Utica.
He was an elephant. Do you know that name at all?
Yeah. It sounds familiar.
Yes, he was an elephant. And he was all for the Italians. Started them working on construction, had them form this Workmen's Benefits, WPA, laying bricks, building swimming pools. There's two swimming pools still standing in Utica that were built by them and in use all summer. Yes, they were very strong, the Italians. They were East Utica. They stayed in one part of town, it seemed. And the Polish people stayed on the other side of town.
Well, that's the way it was in New York. Everybody had their, you know, their section and everything like that. Because they weren't naturalized, both my mother's parents had to, I still have the card.
Do you?
On it. Yeah. That they were enemy aliens. That didn't last very long because of course, Roosevelt needed the Italians to go to war. So.
Right.
Yes.
He had to take, he had to get rid of that, you know, pretty quickly.
Yep.
Right.
So did your grandparents at all, did they talk about Italy at all?
Not really. I have to say that. But all spoken in Italian in their house. The little bit that I learned, that's where I got it. And like I know you said yourself, the only time my mother and father spoke it is when they didn't want us to know what they were talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because they spoke fluently.
Yeah.
Well, sure. They same thing here. Well, my parents used to argue who spoke better Italian because my mother was from Bari and my father was from Naples, and the dialect was completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, they understood.
They're all special.
Okay.
Yeah. they understood each other, but they would always say, well, you know, you're not talking real Italian. You're not talking
We don't Italian. Say it like that. Oh. I know the Calabrese, they had their own way of speaking.
Yeah. And I mentioned to Dan the other day when we talked about, I'm trying to learn this song in Calabrese, and they sent it to me, you know, printed it out, and it doesn't look anything like Italian.
Oh, dear. What was it?
Yeah.
The song is Mangia Grappa. Eat the goat. Yeah. And when we were there, I'm trying to think of the guy's name. I can't remember his first name now, but the singer started singing it, and then he made us sing it, you know, the chorus is A Mangia Grappa, Pizzalia, Pizzalia. And then he would sing the verses, of course, but he made us all sing that part. And so I said, can you, you know, the music was easy. It's only three chords. Trying to learn this phonetically is very, very hard.
Oh, okay.
I know. I'm embarrassed to say I never really learned how to sing the other songs that they sing so fluently and frequently. Solo Mio and those,
My aunts, I had a couple of my older aunts, they always used to, when we had a party or something like that, they were always the singers. My mother, not so much, but she was one of the youngest. She was born in 25. And her oldest brother was born in, I want to say, like 1906, you know, so there was a...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, there was a... Between the oldest and the youngest in my mother's family was 20 years. And in fact, she had some nieces and nephews that were almost the same age as her.
Oh, brother. Yes. Yeah. I remember how that was.
When you have a big family. Yes. It's like that.
It's inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So did you eat Italian food or American food growing up?
Pretty much ate Italian food. Yes. My mother made a lot of frittata, and she, of course, always her Sunday, everybody calls it sauce now. It was gravy that she was making. I'm making the gravy, you know, but it became sauce, and the macaroni became pasta.
Yeah, that's right.
But same difference, yes, very often. But I recall my grandmother giving me this little pot to go over to the slaughterhouse with around the corner from where we live for the blood, the pig's blood. And they would prepare that in such a way it became a dessert.
Really?
It gelled. And they would put nuts and oranges in it. Mm-hmm. And that became a dessert to us.
Yeah.
They sweetened it. That's what it was. We ate a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Every part probably. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. I mean I've heard of them using, you know, pig blood or cow blood for the, but yeah, for a dessert. That's
oh yeah, something. It yeah. was thickened. Yeah. Thickened. We just ate it. We didn't question it.
Yeah, there was other traditions a lot with, of course, the dough, the pasta. My grandmother would, you know, roll it out on the kitchen table, making gnocchi. She'd make the dough, you know, and then of course other pieces. Sometimes, you know, she would just take the dough and just throw it in the hot oil and fry the dough. And roll it in sugar, you know. We have, you know,
it was another dessert.
Pretty simple, but you know, it was probably wasn't too bad. A lot of the flour back then, you know, I don't know.
That's what you got, pizza sweet. Yeah. I got stale bread, wet. Put it under the faucet, Grandma. Okay. Say, put it under the faucet, my grandma, and sprinkle some sugar on it. Oh, it's good. Oh, okay, so I ate it. See, Brandy School was right in the next block from my grandmother, so I was always at my grandmother's. My mother was working in the cotton mill. My father was working.
And this is the one you're named after.
This is Lucrezia. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. We didn't know any better. Everybody was doing the same thing around us. So what did we know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, we actually had, you know, when we were in Calabria, and we in, you know, Fasato, where they, you know, had this whole spread put out for us. We actually had the fried bread, the fried dough with the sugar. Yeah. Oh,
Pizza Fritti, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And that's up near Naples?
This was Montebello in Fossato, actually, but the towns are very close.
Okay.
In the mountains of Montebello, I guess it was Reggio Calabria. But yeah, they
gotcha.
That's what they had.
Was that not something that your family did? Fried the dough?
Probably. I don't remember it. I would guess that probably my father's family more than maybe my grandmother's family. The big dessert that everybody loved that my grandmother's family made was called pizza dolce, which was...
Oh, yes. I've heard of pizza dolce. That wasn't our thing, but I've heard of it.
And it's almost like a flan because there's no pastry involved. They were farmers, so they probably had eggs, ricotta, milk, and sugar. And that's a little lemon. That's all it is.
Custardy, yeah.
It's like a custard, yeah.
Yeah, they had a special pan to cook that in.
We use like a, I guess like a 15 by 7 or 8 roasting pan. That's what I make.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. We didn't. That wasn't our thing. It's funny how different from smaller distances apart. Had different customs. Yes, very different.
Well, and even the languages. I mean, from town to town.
Mm-hmm.
I was told that in Calabria, there's still towns that speak almost Albanian.
I'm sure. Well, they do have a lot of Albanians there.
Yeah.
That's true.
The people at the Lagaros, weren't they Albanians?
Yeah, they've been coming for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Because it's just across the water.
Yeah, it's just across. Right. Yeah. But they still speak a dialect.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Albanian. I also heard some of these small towns still have like almost a Greek kind of dialect.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that my grandfather, my mother's uncle in Pennsylvania, looked Greek. He was dark and had a mustache. He looked very Greek. I always thought that.
Yeah, a lot of Greek in the southern part.
Yes.
Of Italy. They were there for hundreds and hundreds of years.
That part of my mother's family was dark on her mother's side.
Yeah.
Damianos.
Yeah.
So, Dan, have you done a DNA test?
I've done a DNA test, yes.
So what'd you come out as?
It's about 96% Italian. And then there is, I have to look at it to remember, but, there's just little pieces of somewhere else around the Mediterranean, maybe Northern Africa and maybe up in the Middle East. It's mostly all, Italian.
I've never done it.
The Italian area.
I wish I had done my mother's. I kept thinking about it and I never asked. And I should have brought some kits to Italy because the Italians don't do it. Very few. And I guess they don't have to do it. Well, I guess they don't have to know. But you know, Dan, if you did Ancestry now, they split, if you go in there, they split now between your father and mother. So they show you from each side.
Okay, well, I think I might try that one too. I did the a few years back, I did the one called 23andMe.
23andMe.
So that would be interesting to compare the two companies. Yeah, I think I'll try that.
What I don't like about all of the companies, you know, when they go through their algorithm, a lot of times they change over time.
They do, yeah.
But I did too. I did Ancestry and I also did Living DNA. I thought more Europeans would do it because they're based in Switzerland. There wasn't as many. But what Living DNA does is they give you your maternal line and your paternal line.
Okay.
So they could trace back for women, there's only a maternal line. For men, there's both, right? Your maternal and paternal.
Oh, yeah.
And what was really interesting about my mother, her maternal line, 94% from the Caucasus.
Yeah,
going back like 3,000 years.
Wow.
Yeah, her whole DNA going back. Actually, it's more than that. It's probably more like 10,000 years.
Wow.
from the Caucasus. And my father line goes through like Romania, Switzerland.
Oh.
And they said that DNA from my father's paternal line were all like mountain people.
Scandinavian?
Not Scandinavian, but like the mountains of like Romania, Switzerland, Spain. So
wow.
For some reason, these people all came from the mountains.
Yeah, here's mine. That's here. I just find it on the phone, and it's 94.3%.
European.
It says Southern European, and then it'll say 94.3% Italian, but then it says Greek and Balkan, but it's very small.
Yeah, it does.
0.2. And then there's
didn't go back
the 5% is, like I said, Northern,
West Asian,
Caucasian, a little bit in there, Mesopotamian, a little bit there, Cypriot, very small amount. So all the other thing is so small, 1%, 1%, 1%. But yeah, it basically says 94% Italian, Calabria, in 8 regions. So they kind of close the whole thing in. The lower part of
Where you are, where the dark part is there?
Yeah, that's the yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
So, but I would like to try the other one too. You know, she hasn't tried it, but you know, you do collect all these documents as I am for the citizenship that's required to present to the courts, and you end up picking up all these little stories, you know, because. Other people that I know that are in the family have told me things and, you know, whatever.
Be interesting to see my grandchildren take it. That's what I'd like to see, because most of my kids married. Yeah. Nobody married Italian.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
3 of them married Polish.
Yeah.
And one married someone from the Dominican Republic or whatever. So they're all mixed.
Well, that's my wife is half Sicilian. Her mother is Sicilian. Her father was born in Dominican Republic, and he was in, you know, he grew up in Puerto Rico. My wife's grandfather, great grandfather, I think it was. Mm-hmm. He owned coffee and sugar plantations in Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico.
We have someone in our family like that too.
That's great, the coffee.
They just left, you know, they finally came back here. They got nervous. They're older.
Oh.
They have a son in Long Island, so I don't know what they did with, and he was number one coffee plantation
because of the hurricane.
In the Dominican.
Because of the hurricane.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. He had quite a plantation.
I tell you, when you go and you spend as much time as that I do over in a place where your ancestors are from, you pick up the stories because the people in that town have been there for hundreds of years, too.
They want to talk about it.
And they remember people when, say, I was talking to an 80-year-old and a great guy, and he's from there, and he remembers being 10 years old. So he remembers my grandfather's brother, you know, because, you know, when he was 10, it was, I don't know, 70 years ago. And so my grandfather's brother was alive and well and raising his family over there, you know, in that town. So indirectly. But then I also have actually met cousins. So they would be my grandfather's brother's grandchildren. So they're my same generation.
Yeah.
And they're all gone. My mom here is the only one that's left on that particular line.
Right.
So they were so happy to meet me and develop and talk and share pictures because they sort of knew about us. You know, they knew that their grandfather had a brother and he went to America.
Yeah, it just happened it was the two boys who carried the Bonacci name.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, the women don't lose their name anyway in Italy, but
that's right. Yeah.
They're Bonaccis. As well as myself.
So now, Lucrezia, have you ever gone back? Have you ever been to Italy?
I've been, yes, I went in the 70s.
Oh, she's got a story for the, well.
I told you, we'd have to see him personally. Tell him that
story. No, you can tell him.
Wait a minute. This is broadcast.
Oh, she went to 1971?
I went in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
And with two aunts, I talked them into it. And we didn't do a lot of training. They thought we were just going to sit with them and stay there. Well, we wanted to see Rome. I mean, absolutely. I wanted to see Rome. I wanted to see Pisa. And that would be a wonderful story to tell him sometime. But anyway, and then Dan took me in, was it 6 years now?
2016. Wow. Yeah. 2016, we went.
It's almost 6 years ago now.
But really not in the idea thinking that we were.
Not at all. And I'm disappointed that we saved Catanzaro Calabria for the last part of our visit. We did all the upper part first. We went all the way up to where?
From Rome, we were in Tuscany, and we went to Florence.
Yeah, we went up to Tuscany. And Naples, Florence is wonderful.
Yeah.
Of course, the Amalfi Coast.
Yeah.
Those are things you want to do when you go. You know, you want to, Naples, oh my God.
Sorrento, we went.
I never had Spugnatelle until I went to Naples.
Oh, that's right.
Oh my God. They are the kings of Spugnatelle. I love them. So that was it in 16. And so we did get down there, and oh my God, I wanted to just stay there.
Yeah, we, you know, because it was sort of the end of the trip, we only had like 3 days left.
Yeah.
See, I say I want to go there and just go to cemeteries, but
yeah.
We did go to one. Cemetery, yep.
Yeah.
Very different than ours.
Much, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I went, and I don't know if I told this story on our last interview, Dan, but I just 2 months before we went, I got contacted by my father's first cousin through my great grandfather's second wife.
Oh boy!
And my great grandfather was 60, and his second wife was 30, and wow. He had a whole family. Well, not a whole family. He had two daughters,
mm-hmm.
And Nicola is the son of one of the daughters. His Nicola named after his grandfather, and his grandfather is my father's grandfather, and my father was. Nicola, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, Nicoletta was a famous, a popular name around.
Yeah. So he contacted me and we met and for lunch because we were having a thing with the family. And he said, on Tuesday, I'm going to meet you at the cemetery. And then I want you to come with me. So I said, well, it's okay with the driver and with the Tizia, you know. You wait a driver inside. So they said, yeah, it's fine. Do whatever you want to do. You can do whatever you want to do.
Okay.
He took us to the cemetery where my great grandfather was buried along with his second wife and Nicola's mother and father and his aunt. They were all together. But then he showed me the crypt from the family that my great great grandfather sold because he liked gambling and women. So he wound up selling the crypt.
Maybe he gambled it away.
Possibly. And in fact, my great grandfather was illegitimate.
Oh, okay.
He was the first child, and I could piece together, my great grandfather's wife adopted or took on my great grandfather. Somehow, because it's on his birth record that he was definitely illegitimate.
Really?
And so anyway, Nicola takes us to this apartment and we're going up the stairs and he says, just wait for 1 minute. And he goes up and I hear all this Italian going on and back and forth and everything. And he says, okay, you can come up now. And there were two women in their 90s.
Oh,
and they were my father's first cousins. From my grandmother's youngest brother.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I never knew these women existed. I never.
Oh, yeah. Knew. Yeah, yeah.
This is nice.
And we're standing there and they go get photos and they take out the photo of my parents' wedding with my grandmother's writing on the back.
So many things. My mother wrote all over the photographs.
That's what they used to do. Yeah.
Wrote right on the photograph.
Yeah, they used to. In fact, this was like back then in the 20s, it was almost like a postcard. Because on the back, you could actually have the place for the address and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It looked just like a postcard. Yes.
And then when we got back, a few weeks after we got back, Nicola went through his mother's things, and he found photographs that my grandmother sent from America to Italy.
Yeah.
In the 20s. And one of them was 1919, and she wrote on the back, you know, in Italian, of course, to my dear father from your dear daughter, so you never forget.
Wow.
How cute is that?
Wow.
So she knew. She knew that she was never going to see him again.
So, yeah, yeah.
And so now it's 100 years later, and comes up with this card.
Yeah.
But I tell people there's no accidents. There's some force out there.
We have a similar. Get some water. We have a similar story. So my fiance and I were looking at the house to purchase, and we see a steamer trunk in the house because the furnitures were in there. And we have the steamer trunk, and we're looking at it. And sure enough, there was a steamer trunk in that house that came from Utica, my hometown.
Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Well, but again, this speaks to the connection.
The connection, yeah.
There was a couple organizations in Utica here, because there were so many people from Cropani in Calabria that were from, that were living in Utica, that they, you know, and I'm sure a lot of them went back and forth.
We knew the name.
Some never went back. But, and then when I'm, and to this day, when I am in Cropani, all the names, you know, are my hometown names. And I joke to my brother, one day when you come here, you're going to realize, you walk down the street, and everybody's from, looks like they're from Utica.
I know, it's so funny, and they treat, you know, that's the thing I came away with. First of all, how they treat you. The second thing is they don't forget. They know things that happened 300 years ago.
Open arms like it was yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable.
And that's the way we were greeted by my father's cousins. Like, we left there, and I said to my wife, I said, you know, I felt like this was 60 years ago.
Oh.
That I was with
wonderful.
My family. And that's just the way they treated us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't like,
oh, you're some stranger from another country that just wants to see. No, it was family.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's
such a warm feeling. Yes.
It was, you know, probably such a big thing, because family, of course, is very important. And these people were going away across the ocean in a boat. They didn't even know where they
were
going. True. No one had ever gone before. And they probably thought, I probably will never come back. So it was a very emotional and mental strain.
I guess
so. So now when they see people that are like, well, all those people are dead now, because that was 100 years ago or more. But we're back here. We don't really know why. We're just kind of drawn back.
There must be somebody around
to meet. Sure enough, things as the years go by, as the months go by, you know, especially for me, because I'm able to stay because I have a property. You know, you just find more and more people that are there, and they knew people that we knew. So
it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Now, Sorrentino, there aren't too many Sorrentinos around here in Utica. I don't think anybody settled here. There are Fiorentinos. You know that name at all?
I know that name. Sure, yeah, I've heard that name. Yeah. Yeah.
We knew that.
That's a Calabrian name as well. There's a store down there called Fiorentino.
Every country we passed, every street. I know those people.
You know, also the town.
Everybody
had a town of Vendetta. You know, there's a big Nicotera. You would have loved Nicotera here locally because he was a fella who all the musicians went to. He operated out of his garage. He sold drum sets. He sold guitars.
It was
a
bakery.
She says the bakery. I didn't know anything about that.
It was a bakery.
I knew they had drum sets and guitars and guitar strings and drumsticks. The guy was great. And he just, what he did, which is very similar in Italy, he lived in the house and he turned his garage into a store.
Yeah.
And in Italy, you live above the what they call
your
the magazine.
Business.
So they, yep. You live above what they call the magazine.
Uh-huh.
And you open that up with an overhead door, and that's where you sell your cheese and your wine and your bread.
My gosh, imagine how wonderful that must be. You need a loaf of bread, you just go down the street.
Yeah, yeah.
I paid $4.50 for a loaf of bread last week. $4.50.
That's not. We went to the store today. I couldn't believe $50. We had nothing.
Oh, no.
Well, I had some. I wanted to have a couple of extra things around because, and I can't stand and cook at the store the way I used to. So I decided I'm going to order a nice half tray of.
I couldn't believe this.
Mulligan, nice baked eggplant, all done.
Well, see, there's the dialect. She called it.
Okay. Molanzane, you said.
Molanzane, yeah, okay.
So I did, and I'm telling him about it, and he said, oh, that's so nice. I said, yeah, it's. I hope you enjoy it. He goes, why? I said, because it was pretty darn expensive. He says, what, 30? No. 40? No, come on. 50? No. $60 for a half a tray. I'm talking a half a tray was maybe that big.
This is American. Okay.
But I wasn't going to stand there and dip it and fry it for 2 hours either. So it was worth it. It was delicious.
I know. It's funny you say that because I went and got an eggplant. We call them heroes, sub, whatever.
Hero,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
right? Sure.
$19.50.
No.
$19.50.
Well, who just told us something?
Must be eggplants. It's getting to be rare. I don't know.
Unbelievable.
Well, yeah.
Well, how much was a loaf of bread when you were a kid?
Oh, my God, if it was 10 cents. And don't laugh, we used to try and buy the day old. You know, that was even cheaper. Chris, there were bakeries around then. Where my
lots of bakeries.
Yeah, when my grandmother's, I used to go, the school was here, the bakery was across the street.
Oh, I remember.
Go buy a loaf of bread.
Not only did I wake up, we had also a huge Wonder Bread factory.
Yes.
So I woke up with the smell of fresh bread. But then there was the Italian smaller shops.
Yeah,
you know,
it had the fresh bread.
Because the Wonder Bread, you know, that was like a factory.
That was American bread.
But yeah, the small shops, the family shops, Rintrone's, DeVito's, you know, all those, they were making
all baking it in their back rooms.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
my girlfriend that lived way down, right in the heart of East Utica, mother would bake the bread every day, which was... God, I can't even imagine.
There was another one.
And there was a couple of months down from her on the same street. And she'd say to her mother sometimes when they go to school, gee, Mary and Jane, they always have bread with those red balloons. The paper's got red balloons on it. Why can't we have that?
Oh, yeah.
She said, the ones that had the red balloons were wishing that their mother was baking the bread that you were making.
We used to go to the beach with eggplant parmesan and sausage and peppers.
I used to take it. That's right.
And the kids on the next blanket were eating peanut butter and jelly.
I'm blown. That's right. That's, my mother'd get up early in the morning and fry peppers for us to make lunch to go to high school. I remember before she went to work.
We still got Utica. You know, I mean. I don't know. I don't think it'll ever die with that good Italian food. We still got quite a few places around.
Oh, yeah.
Great sausage, great breads, great pastries. Yeah.
Yeah, we have to hunt it down, but it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pastry shop.
And $60 eggplant.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's true.
It tastes
as good as Italy, but boy, it costs about three times the price. Yeah.
I didn't realize it until she gave me the bill. I said, I only asked for half a tray. You know, I said, wow. I said, then how much must a whole tree have? She said, I know. But it was worth it.
My cousin Cynthia fried, I think she said, 5 kilos of eggplant when we went to Fasano.
You know how long it takes? Yeah. I only did one eggplant with my daughter about 3 weeks ago. I did all the dipping and the breading, and she fried. When we got to cut the second, she said, Mom, we're not doing the second one. I said, you're right. I can't stand her anymore.
I'll do like 3 or 4 at a time, and then I freeze them. I bread them, fry them, freeze them.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know.
Then when you want them, you take them out. Yes. Yeah. Got them. Yeah.
It makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, at least and it's funny. I was here one day in the summertime. You know, of course we have central air conditioning. The air conditioner's going. I'm frying and I'm, you know, the thing. And I thought back to my aunt's in the small little kitchen, air conditioning, for hours and hours and hours. Never a complaint. Never.
No, it was it was the norm.
Yeah,
it's the norm. That's the way everything was done.
Well, that's why Italian food tastes so good. It's because it's made with love. So that's
the difference. Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Dan, Lucrezia, I really appreciate it. I thank you so much for doing this. It was a lot of fun.
We're happy to do it.
My daughter in South Carolina will be looking forward to watching it.
Oh, good.
Record it. They'll watch. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you.
Congratulations on putting together a good show like this. I see a lot of your other interviews as well as your other posts and all the other information. It's
fun.
It's good stuff. Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
Interesting. Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate it. And I'm hoping any day now. My book is going to be out, so you need to sell some in Utica.
Yeah.
What's the name of it?
It's called Farmers and Nobles. Because my mother's family were farmers and my father's family were nobles. I go through why I started doing the research.
Okay, great.
And then I talk a little bit about my childhood growing up, and then my research, and then stories about the 30 or so noble families that I have. So
wonderful. Well, we only have one bookstore, so. Hopefully it'll get to Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, so what would be the easiest way to get it?
Well, it'll be on Amazon, it'll be on Janaway, and I think I could sell them myself too, but I have to figure that out. But it'll be on Amazon for sure.
Amazon. So. My kids are all on Amazon. What did they do before that? I don't know.
You went to the bookstore.
Yes. That's the truth.
Everything changes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting us to do this.
No, it's my pleasure.